Up next, we'll invite Carl Malan. Carl is the Chief Operations Officer at the EcoBank Foundation, based in Ghana, Accra, but currently is in Cape Town. Carl, you've been writing a lot on philanthropy, especially innovations and creativity in Africa, mainly from the perspective of corporate philanthropy. What has been the response and what are the implications on corporates and their giving going forward?
Thank you very much, Becky. I think I'll pick up from what Bongiwe, a few points from Bongiwe, where she speaks about philanthropy addressing personal and community needs. And we should ask ourselves a question: if the communities themselves are already engaging in this space, is it really philanthropy? And really, the point that then comes is, where is the infrastructure that we have on the continent to be able to have the scale of philanthropy that is required? So when you give the example of Jack Ma, I think we have reached a point where the level of industrialization in China allows some of the philanthropists in China to move some of their resources outside of the country. But on the continent, there have been a number of solidarity funds that have been created, and we need to look at the blueprint that Ebola in West Africa provided us with. Through the leadership of the African Union, we had a fund that was set up to fight Ebola for the three countries in West Africa. And those, the continent, Africans, leaders, African philanthropists raised $34 million at the time. And in addition, they provided individuals across the continent to actually donate through an SMS campaign. That SMS campaign, fast forward to now 6 years later, the technology allows us to move money across the continent in a different way. And that digital platform and that banking innovation has been an important element to look at how do we look at micro donations, not only in the context of citizen engagement to pool resources for health or for COVID-19 in that case, but eventually to find a way to ensure that we can support micro enterprises on the continent. We have a model already, because we can see that through what we call Stockvel in South Africa, Susu in Ghana, and Pamoja in Tanzania, communities always come together to pool their resources. And the question is, can we do this at scale? Now, the African Union has launched a citizen engagement campaign trying to reach 1 million Africans in diaspora, with the aim of each one of us contributing at least $1. It is a start of something which I think we should all support. And that support will ensure that we start to think about how the mobile banking innovation that that has happened in Africa start to allow us to move towards issues that we need to think about more specifically, which is how do we ensure that micro enterprises that employ the majority on the continent can actually have the resources that they need, not only to weather the storm that was brought by COVID-19, but to start gradually to move into the formal space. The formal space is important because we need to ensure that the fiscal space of a government becomes broader, and that comes through taxation, and what are the best form of taxation that we can have. Now, specifically on your point around the response of corporate, every corporate across Africa has contributed to National Response Fund. A lot of them are now looking at how they can support the African Union. So sometimes I think the lack of communication about what is being done on the continent, and some of us not necessarily looking at what the African Union does, makes us think that nothing is moving. But actually, there are lots of initiatives that the African Union has been able to put in place. Let's take the example of the Africa CDC. The Africa CDC did not exist when we had the Ebola outbreak in 2014, 2016 in West Africa. It was inaugurated in January 2017. It has been very active in fighting Ebola in DRC, and now it is at the forefront of a response to COVID-19 in Africa. So these elements that happen at continental level are extremely important because they build from this, they strengthen national responses. So corporations, philanthropists, individuals all have a role to play in ensuring that COVID-19 is actually a catalyst to accelerate change in Africa. I'll pause here, Becky, to continue the conversation.
There are no questions to you, Carl, but maybe you want to reflect a bit on the situation in West Africa. I think a lot of colleagues here are so familiar with what's happening in Southern Africa.
Becky, on the question around the role of a corporate, I think on the continent today, the best form of philanthropy is the one that creates jobs. When people actually have access to decent jobs, there are certain things that they can do to take care of themselves. So that's something which I think is very important. In terms of a response across West Africa, let's not forget that already many of the airports across the continent were screening for temperature because of the Ebola outbreak in DRC. So we have had to use the infrastructure that was already available. And one of the advantages, at least at this point, is probably that COVID-19 entered most of our countries through the airports. So those mechanisms that were already in place have been an important mechanism to probably delay the curve. Now, we don't know how the virus will behave. And I think we need to remain vigilant and listen to what the Africa CDC has to say. West Africa is no different to other parts of the continent in the sense that there are challenges in terms of stopping physical proximity. And the physical proximity is very important to micro enterprises in terms of ensuring that they can have the foot traffic to sell their way or to sell food and different elements. So the reality of the continent is one where across different parts, there is element around the informal economy, which is really what drives our countries. So if that is the case, the measures that have to be applied need to take into account how do we ensure that they can continue to have what is required to sustain themselves so that they don't have to make a decision between the virus and hunger. So I don't think there are, of course, some countries that have done very well in responding. I can think, for example, of the current country where I am based, which is Togo, where they have created a platform called Novisi, which is then a model of cash transfer using mobile technology. So people can register using a USSD code, so they don't need to have a smartphone. And using that technology, government is able to provide them with some funding. So I think today, what COVID-19 has done, it has accelerated some of the changes that we thought were not possible. The use of mobile banking, the use of e-banking, the use of remote working, for example. But these are also created a situation where the cost of access to data means that we are leaving a few more people behind. Whereas before we were able to move, let's think about education today. How many children can actually have access to remote education? And that is an important part of the conversation that we need to have around decreasing the access to education if we have to use modern technology and data. Over to you, Becky.
Thank you, Carl. I think one last question from my side, and then we'll move on to Bulelo. You've been commenting on the state of civil society across Africa even before COVID-19. What has happened now with COVID-19, and what is the future of civil society and its ability to contribute to development across the continent?
So they play an extremely important role. And I think the future is at the intersection of public, private, and civil society. This is where those changes that we need to see in society will happen, when those three parties actually speak together with in mind those that are not in the room. The civil society will probably go through a very difficult time because a lot of the resources that support them are coming from outside the continent, which means that there is now an opportunity for Africans themselves and the diaspora to look at which are these civil society organizations on the continent that can support real change in communities. There are a few of them across the continent, but this is probably the time also where we need to look carefully at all these different organizations and how do we support them. Supporting them can take different forms. A corporate organization, for example, can make sure that staff is available to help in terms of finance, accounting. It can also be an opportunity to sensitize staff around the work that is being done by these civil society organizations, and for those that are willing to actually chip in. I'm a strong believer of the fact that people that today have the opportunity to work, have access to decent work, and if they can spare some change, can pool those resources to support civil society across the continent. Over to you, Becky.
Thank you, Carl. The second question is, does philanthropy regard itself as impactful? How is it measured? What do you think is the future of philanthropy will look like in South Africa post COVID-19?
On the first point, COVID-19 is changing the structure of our economies because it was demand driven, and then suddenly people cannot necessarily have the same level of demand. So what does it require then for the future? There are some countries that are oil producers on the continent. There are no cars on the road. There are no planes that are flying in the air. Therefore, the demand for kerosene and even for oil, for petrol, is limited. I think when it comes to impact, it's very much what was a vision. If you have a small vision, then the impact will be limited. I think we have to start to dream big about what is possible for this continent of 1.3 billion people. If we think only of how do we ensure that we can feed people for a certain period of time, that's probably good enough for a period of time. As long as we don't create jobs at the scale that we need on the continent, as long as we don't think about moving, improving our agriculture, manufacturing and industrialization, we will not have a kind of philanthropy that some parts, other parts of the world have seen. At the beginning of the conversation, we mentioned what Jack Ma was able to do for the continent. Well, capital was accumulated using technology. If we think about the history of philanthropy in America, for example, and the names that we all know today, they were industrialists that have then not only created jobs, but used the surplus to get into philanthropy. We may debate on some elements, but I think the key part here is to really think about how do we have structures of our economies that actually allow for accumulation and redistribution. It's very hard to redistribute when it's not been accumulated. And one of the ways in which we probably need to think about it is not everybody will become rich, but most people should have access to a decent job. If we fix the job conversation by ensuring that all resources that we have, we are taking a stronger step toward more equality in the continent in which we have. So the vision will determine the impact that we have that we want to have for this continent.
Corporates and high net worth individuals are privy to tax holidays and have over the years enjoyed decreased tax rates. South Africa's response in terms of the social relief is unsustainable, and the situation at community level is already volatile. What kind of advocacy and lobbying efforts are acknowledging the realities for the poor and the benefits that are enjoyed by the rich so that we can close this gap?
So thank you very much for these comments. I will focus on the question around closing the gap. I think catching up is a very difficult policy to follow in a sort of dynamic environment. What I've seen on the continent are factories that are being repurposed to make face masks and other protective equipment. This is the change that we need to see more. It means that the manufacturing capacity is growing, and that's what is important because those will create jobs. When we're looking at many countries that are selling raw materials on the continent, implies that we are applying a very lazy policy, which is getting from the rural areas to the port, exported, then the cash comes. We need to make sure that we transform more of those on the continent so that the discussion around the gap that needs to be closed is less about closing the gap, it's more about creating jobs. And I think we need to put more energy into that. And I think if we then look at the question around the local production of drugs on the continent, this is an area where you will have spillover effect in terms of science and technology, but also reducing the cost that the price tag of the continent in terms of importing drugs on a yearly basis. Over to you, Becky.
We haven't spoken a lot about technology, the fourth industrial revolution, and how it's likely to either, you know, assist in pivoting to the new normal or pose a threat in many ways. And so I'm thinking here about the ways in which we are going to design our institutions, the platforms that we're going to put in place in order to do our work, but also some of the processes and system around AI and among others that we can use for resource mobilization. Could you take just a few minutes to reflect on the role that technology might play in assisting us to move into the new normal?
So, Becky, to your point around the technology and fourth industrial revolution, I think the majority of Africans live in rural area, and they have very simple needs, which is access to electricity and water. Most of the life focus around agriculture. And for me, technology needs to have a purpose. And for what we have today, it's about pooling resources and ensuring that more resources are available to those that need. It is a majority of Africans, those in rural areas, and those that are also in slum area in cities.